Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's a whole fleet of them. Look on the ASA. My gosh. They're all going against the wind.
It was basically a cube with inside of sphere where the points of the cube were touching outside of the sphere.
So this isn't anything that just is limited to the United States. It's a worldwide phenomenon.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. Andy here, and this is your March recap. A couple of days late, I know we're in April, but the point of this podcast is we're recapping and playing highlights of some of the interviews that happened last month. What you're going to hear in this podcast is an interview with Diana Pasulka, very popular, so many good comments and feedback from that one, thank you so much. We're playing a clip where Diana talks about UFOs, the Vatican and religion in general, which was fascinating. Then you'll hear a little clip from Daniel Otis. We spoke to Daniel, who had successfully FOIA'd to get a lot of documents from the Canadian government. Some great work by Daniel, a journalist in his own right who is just getting his feet wet and dipping his toes in the water and all those analogies that I like in the UFO subject, which is brilliant because he comes at it with a really fresh perspective. He talks about UFOs in Canada, air traffic control, and also NORAD and their part with the US and Canadian relationship with NORAD. Jazz Shaw, fascinating interview, brilliant to finally speak to Jazz on the podcast. I've spoken to him a few times on other podcasts. He talks his opinion on Roswell and some controversial potential theories as to what may have happened, and also he answers a listener question on the supposed bombshell Harry Reid video that may or may not exist. So we asked Jazz his thoughts on that. And finally, I'm playing a little bit of a tease for the upcoming Rich Hoffman interview. Rich Hoffman, an executive board member on SCU, 20-year defence contractor, and so many other titles as well. Rich, the feedback for this one has been fantastic. It's already out as we record this on Patreon, Apple Premium, Spotify Premium, on YouTube Premium, any of those paid subscription platforms, and I'm sorry if it's behind a paywall and it doesn't stay behind there long, but it came out very early on there for everyone since we're quite ahead with interviews. The feedback's been fantastic. That one is due for general release on the 11th of April. That will be in two parts, on the 11th and the 13th of April. But if you want to listen to it early, you can check it out after this little teaser where Rich talks about SCU's rubber duck UAP video analysis. It was a brilliant interview. Mainly down to Rich, not myself, of course. He was great to speak to, and he was really good for not just talking about the data and the science, but quite happy to speculate as well. And he's definitely got his own favourite theories as to what UAP may be, which are fascinating as well. And just before we get into the podcast, where you'll hear all those played back to back, a little shout out to supporter of the podcast, Jamie, who asked for a shout out. more than happy to do that. So hi Jamie, thank you again for getting in touch and supporting as you do, and thanks to everyone else who supports, listens, shares and engages with the podcast. It means a lot. Again, busy month still to come. Daz Smith is due for an interview next week. We'll be talking about remote viewing UFOs. After that, I have Louise Elizondo on the 23rd of April. Those interviews will round off April and start early May as well, which will actually be the 2-year anniversary of the podcast. So a little celebration there. Whoop, whoop. And I've just recorded last night with Avi Loeb. That interview won't be up until, when I look at this now, the 20th. As I look at Rich Hoffman on the 11th of April and then Avi Loeb on the 18th of April, that'll be released. But again, early on Patreon, etc. So if you can support, or if you just want to check out the premium services, you can do so with some free trials in different places, particularly a 2-week free trial on Apple, all for about the price of a coffee a month. You get early access, no adverts, all that kind of stuff. And I really do think I like to put in the effort to get those out as quickly as possible, and there's no adverts or sponsorships or anything like that either. So thank you very much. Enjoy the recap show, folks, and we'll speak to you soon. He asks, what is the Vatican's view of the phenomenon, and does Diana think that what they think and does Diana think what they have is a good understanding of the phenomenon based on their records and faith?
Okay, so talking about what the Vatican thinks about it is like talking about what does the U.S. government think about UFOs. So there are a lot of different opinions, okay? A lot of people in the Vatican don't want it, they don't care, right, in the hierarchy. Some people don't want to talk about it at all. Some people talk about it and say, you know, that it exists, but we don't really know about it. Some would look back on their records and say, yeah, this looks like something that's anomalous, and some totally discount it. So there is no set dogma or statement with respect to what the Vatican thinks about it. However, the Vatican has an association of Catholic scientists, and every once in a while, I think like once a year, they host a conference on extraterrestrial extraterrestrial civilizations and things like that. And they have people from Harvard and MIT there. I've been invited there. And so, yeah, they're completely open to it. But is this like intelligent extraterrestrial kind of like reptilians that they're talking about? No, this would be more like, you know, are there microbes on this exoplanet, that, you know, we could possibly, you know, utilize this to when we ruin our own planet, something like that. They work with NASA, you know, and things like that. So they're definitely open to it. And they're up on the research, right? So a lot of people have been doing this research for a very long time. But they're not out, they're not the ones that are out there making extreme claims, or, you know, they're not like, they're not doing, they're just not doing press releases every day, or even every week, or ever.
Yeah. Sure. Sebastian wants to know, he would be interested to know if you have any other examples of saints in Christianity beside Santa Teresa de Avila, which she mentions in her book, that have been rumored to be connected to the phenomenon, and maybe more recent ones as well.
Yeah, I see. It looks like a lot of them have. So I have the trial records of Joseph of Copertino. So he's an Italian saint who has levitated and has said to have levitated. So he's really interesting. So Sebastian can look at into him. You also have Sister Maria of Agreda. She's Spanish. She's a contemporary of Joseph of Cupertino. I actually mentioned her in my book, American Cosmic. And she wrote she lived in the 1600s, and she wrote a cosmology of the world and the earth. She wrote this a long time ago, and she was basically talking about the spinning earth so she could see it from space, because she believed that she was elevated off earth by on the wings of angels. And she also came to the United States and was able to land in the United States and talk about what she saw there, which looked pretty accurate. And she's even known in New Mexico and Arizona as the Lady in Blue. So there are a lot. Francis, St. Francis of Assisi, he had what looks like a pretty intense aerial phenomena experience that radiated him and gave him the stigmata, what now is called the stigmata. That was the first instance of it. So there are a lot of occurrences, and not just the saints that we know. There are, you know, literally hundreds of thousands of records, if not more, that talk about aerial phenomena. I mean, I just found some, you know, randomly in my searches in purgatory before I ever started this research. So there, you know, the histories of religions, that's a rich tradition for this information.
Largely because it was you that got the ball rolling on this over a period of many months, I think about 9 months. How did this all come about for you?
Well, I actually initially filed my request for these reports about a year ago, back in February of 2021. When they got back to me, they basically said that I'd filed the request with Transport Canada, which is the government transportation department. They got back to me and basically said, you know, look elsewhere. I didn't believe them, and I kept asking. So through several Freedom of Information requests, I was able to get these reports. The way I knew of their existence was Transport Canada, again, it's a Canadian federal agency. They maintain an online aviation incident database. So I found this early in my research, and this database is very interesting. You know, any kind of incident that happens with a pilot in Canadian skies gets logged in here. That could be a bird strike, mechanical failure, drunken unruly passengers, and UFO reports make it into there as well. So, you know, by going through that database, I was able to pull a couple dozen UFO reports. And then through the Freedom of Information system, what I was trying to do was find the source reports that informed those public-facing ones I was finding. And that's what this newest story consists of. It's, you know, nearly 300 pages of reports. And the majority of those reports were sent to Canadian transportation officials by a private company called NAV Canada, which owns and operates all of the civilian air traffic control infrastructure here in Canada. I think in most countries in the world, air traffic control is operated by usually government agencies. Here in Canada, it's a private company, you know. So there, I would imagine in terms of radar data, tower recordings, et cetera, this private company probably holds most of the relevant data for anyone who wants to research UFOs in Canada. But as a private entity, obviously you can't target it with Freedom of Information requests. So, you know, I was able to figure out which departments within our federal transportation department that the air traffic control company was speaking to. And then in subsequent requests that were very specific, targeting the offices I knew that were communicating with this air traffic control company, that's how I was able to get these nearly 300 pages of reports.
And that's great work, and it's tenacious as well. Were you able to speak to any of the staff who work at air traffic control, or is that something that's a bit off limits given it's not necessarily public facing, like you say?
Yeah, they will respond with very generic statements about, you know, how they deal with these reports and forward them to relevant authorities. But I have yet to have a good on-the-record conversation with anyone there that could, you know, give me some inner workings. If anyone's listening and they're working in Canadian air traffic control, shoot me a line, give me a call. Always happy to talk on or off the record. But as of now, no, I have not been given an on-the-record look at the inner workings of how they handle this kind of stuff. But, you know, the document trail is pretty clear. Air traffic control in Canada, they, you know, they're the first point of contact if a pilot sees something. You know, they're flying along, they radio air traffic control. Air traffic control then notifies Transport Canada, the Federal Transportation Department, and they also notify the Canadian Air Force, specifically a Canadian Air Force unit that's affiliated with NORAD, NORAD being the Joint Canada-U.S. Air Defense System that's been guarding North American skies since early in the Cold War.
I think my experience with NORAD would be using its YouTube channel to track Santa when it's Christmas time with the kids. So it's good to know that they've got other uses out there as well. You're not based.
Well, Santa isn't the only thing NORAD's tracking. You know, there's evidence in this story, for example. There was one report specifically that involved a fisherman in the Bay of Fundy in the Atlantic and a woman at home in Nova Scotia being an Atlantic province here in Canada. And they both separately reported seeing something glowing in the sky, hovering out over the ocean at night. These two individuals contacted a search and rescue center in the city of Halifax. The search and rescue center then contacted a NORAD-affiliated Air Force squadron. That squadron conducted playback on NORAD radar and observed a radar hits that correlated almost exactly to the time and location of the sighting. So there's a nice instance where you can see, you know, civilians see something, it's corroborated by NORAD radar. Santa isn't the only thing that NORAD is tracking.
Did you know that podcast advertising is way more effective than display advertising, with 67% of listeners remembering brands and 63% making a purchase after hearing them? Whether you want to diversify your ad spend, add a new marketing stream, or test out podcast ads, Zencastr's creator network makes it easy for brands to connect with podcasters. Zencastr's mission is to make podcast advertisements as easy and accessible to business owners as Google or Facebook. Host-read ads like this are the most effective form of podcast advertising. Zencastr works with podcasters to help create unique to them ad spots that create brand awareness and conversion. Zencastr's creator network is the perfect place for you to get into podcast ads and sponsor your favorite creators like me. I've worked with Zencastr now for some time, and they truly put the content creators and the listeners at the heart of what they do. As a huge fan of podcasts myself, and I really mean that, I love podcasts, I often buy products or services that I find useful to me based on those pods that I'm listening to. It supports them, and there's usually a good discount to go along with it. So if you're interested in sponsoring this show or another podcast with adverts for your business, go to zen.ai/thatufopod1, that's the number one, or click the link in the description and fill out the contact information so Zencastr can help you bring your business story to life. Gaz wants to know, what is your honest take on Roswell? Asking Jazz as a truly seasoned pro in the subject of UFOs. Gaz isn't sure. There seems to be a little more than... He seems to think there's more than the normal level of discussion about Roswell lately, and wondering if something's going to potentially come out.
Roswell is one that I have looked into, not nearly as deeply as some other people. I enjoy the subject. I've always found it interesting. The only thing I can say conclusively to my satisfaction is, first, something came down on that ranch, probably in late June of 1947, and wasn't discovered by Max Brazel until July 7th, right? And that's when all the notifications and hubbub-a-loo started. Something came down out of the sky. And the second thing I'm convinced of, there was a cover-up by the government. In fact, there was at least four of them. What they were covering up, as far as I'm concerned, we still don't know. I have my own theories. I think extraterrestrial craft is probably number two on the list. I have heard Nick Redfern has actually, I think he wrote an entire book, but he also did some articles on it. He did a lot of digging, and I still think it's very possible that that was a top secret program, not the the secret listening balloon program. The name slipped my mind right now. Not that, but again, now we're getting back to the subject of the government done some terrible things at times. There are documents that Nick highlighted and witness reports from people that were alive at the time who suggested that back then we were first studying the effects of very high altitude flight and radiation on people. And they suggest that the government may have taken maybe some Japanese prisoners of war, maybe even, I'm going to say something horrible, trigger warning, shut off the show if you're not ready, that they may have even taken disabled children who were abandoned at asylums and homes and things back in the day, which happened if you had a child that, you know, had severe birth defects, and it's tragic what they did. Maybe some children, maybe some Japanese prisoners, and put them in a craft suspended from a really huge balloon that was not pressurized, and just shot them way up into the air just to watch what the effects are on people of being up there without pressure suits or anything. And of course they would die. And if one of those crashed, that's certainly the sort of thing they wouldn't want to talk about back then because of classification. And also they would never want to reveal something like that. if that's the case, that might have been what they covered up. The other possibility is, yeah, it was a flying disc, and somebody didn't get a memo and went out and called the radio station, who called the newspaper, and said, yeah, we're covering a flying disc. We'll check it into it. We'll let you know. And they yanked him off the stage really fast with a hook. And then they came out and went, nope, weather balloon. You know.
Yeah.
So that's my answer. I don't have a personal belief, but I would put extraterrestrial incursion fairly high on the list, but not at the top.
I've said on the podcast, Jazz, that it happened so long ago, and it's the first case I think almost exclusively everyone hears about when they get into the subject of UFOs or are first exposed to it, that I'm always wary of things that happened so long ago getting like additional books and new witnesses, because almost everyone involved in that at the time has now passed away, and the grandchildren of these people have more or less passed away as well. So you're now on to the great, great, great grandchildren of anyone who was involved. And I think the only true way anything could really come out further about the case would be if the government did have some super secret files that one day they opened up, you know, through a John Greenwald, and they opened them up and went, here you go, here's what happened, or here's something from it. But it's one of those, I think the myth, the lore, the legend is there for a good reason. And but interesting. Thanks for the question, Gaz. Sazek asks, have you heard or seen anything about the supposed video Senator Harry Reid left after his passing?
Okay, I guess now it's safe to talk about it. I have spoken to a couple other journalists about the rumor that, and this started about 3 years ago, that I guess the general consensus seemed to be that he had recorded, when he found out he was sick and whatnot, had recorded something most likely with George Knapp. The reason people thought that, there was one podcast, God, I'd have to go back and find my notes, where there was a discussion in the background where Jeremy Corbell had gone on that show, and while they were recording it, and it wasn't alive, it was being recorded, if the story's true, that he had said to the host or hosts, I think it was two people, he was just telling the story and getting into it, and just sort of mentioned out of the blue that Harry Reid had done that, which is important, you know, because you don't want to lose. And then he kind of stopped and was like, wait a minute, hold on, we need to cut that. And I guess if the story is true, they cut that section out of it before it was published. But there were people who allegedly watched that portion of it. So we never heard it from Harry Reid. We never heard it from George Knapp. We never heard it directly from Jeremy Corbell. This is one of those stories that you heard from somebody who heard from who allegedly knew about, like three generations away. With all that said, just because of their history together, and by they, I mean Harry Reid and George Knapp, and all the years and the exclusive access that Knapp always had to Harry Reid whenever he wanted him, you know, he'd talk to him. He was at his house all the time. I would not be at all shocked if that video exists. There may have been instructions, you know, even after I'm gone, you have to wait a certain amount of time before it gets released, you know, let all the funeral arrangements and my family and everything get taken care of. Maybe there's something about it that has information included that could get someone else in trouble until those things get sorted out. So the answer is no, I don't know for sure 100%, because I was not one of the people who watched that podcast. And even if I had been, I'd still be relying on Corbell's knowledge. So sure. I don't personally know anybody who's actually seen the video, which would be the only way to confirm it. And Knapp's always very good at holding things close to the vest. So,
and I think
even I find it plausible.
Fair answer. Craig, who's one of the longest listeners to the podcast, hi Craig, asks, can Rich comment on the SCU analysis of the rubber duck UAP video?
As a matter of fact, that right now, that analysis is going through peer review. We've actually put the report together. It's being peer reviewed. We're hoping to have that out probably by and finalized as far as the peer review study by within the next 2 months. Bottom line on that is that the it's a similar situation where you have Homeland Security, the Customs and Border Protection people engaged in and watching an object that was near the border, and potentially what you look at it on thermal, and we understand thermal usually it has like settings. It's basically, you know, it might be black hot or white as hot, and so in this case, in that one, it was basically black was hot, which meant that the thermal contrast between like cows on the ground or the whatever would be warmer than what you'd see on the object that was seen there. You have an object there that basically maneuvered around for over 40 minutes, you know, and was video recorded as even the object went around it, you know, or the aircraft went around it and did loops and parallel. Parallax had to be focused on as well in this study. But ultimately, the thermal signature doesn't match anything that we typically know of. It was extremely cold. And so what would be cold like that, that would yield that kind of a thermal temperature? And when we compare that against other kinds of objects, like if drone, somebody suggested it might have been a parachute with a payload on it that was actually seen, and that would give the rubber ducky kind of appearance. Well, first off, the balloon idea doesn't work because it's going in directions against wind at times. And so you have also the fact that ultimately the object itself is completely cold, and nothing like a parachute would give that kind of like, or a balloon would have given you that kind of like thermal image. So there's a lot of these types of things that I'm talking about that we expand on in the paper, but we ultimately come up with the fact that it remains inconclusive. It's anomalous. We don't know what it is. It doesn't correspond with anything that we typically think of as being conventional or natural.
That is all for this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. Please remember to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. You can like, retweet, and subscribe. That would all be very much appreciated. The shows are being uploaded onto YouTube as we speak more and more. You can sign up at patreon.com/thatufopodcast to access the shows ad-free as well. Please get in touch on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, thatufopodcast. Of course, on Twitter, it's @UFOUAPAM. And again, folks, as always, keep looking up. You never know what you might see.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer. More like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rain. Meditative game of state full on meta. Can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. Then I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. And I called up my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should take care of me. And I don't know what to do because it doesn't really scare me. If you really want to know who I think I'd be, then it's you and me, and us and we, and him and her, and that and she, and that thing over there, and what's that, Jake? But for being serious, open your mind, consider your heart, consider time, consider your space, consider
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.